The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, we're still coming to terms with the effect of the coronavirus limitations. Of course, we're into Shabbat Chaye Sarah. Usually this is almost like a cult Shabbat. Can I call it that? People go down to Hebron. Of course, this is the parasha that we read of the purchase of the cave of the patriarchs, for the burial of Sarah particularly, but also many of the other patriarchs have been buried there too, and matriarchs. But the point is that this is the parasha which mentions the purchase and actually even mentions the value that was paid for that particular property. And this is what many people believe is the indication of the fact that it does legally belong to Jewish hands rather than the current situation where we're forced to share it, even though there is some sort of a status quo around the caves of the Machpelah, the caves of the patriarch itself, but also the whole area around Hebron. That whole kind of cult following and the Shabbat that normally takes place this week, this particular parasha reading, of course, won't be taking place this year as usual. So just one of those things that we're being forced to get used to under the new circumstances. The good news is that finally we got that bill passed through the Knesset to create green zones around Eilat and the Dead Sea Hotel area in Bokek to allow the hotels to open, to allow visitors, tourists, Israeli tourists to go and visit there freely, as long as you have a negative COVID test 72 hours before you go there. So this is an attempt to try to open up a so-called green island. There was an attempt, as I mentioned earlier in the week, to try to load a few other cities on the back of it. That has now been safely taken care of, and it's only Eilat and the Ein Bokek area of the Dead Sea, which are declared so-called green islands. So let's hope that that will start to return some economy to those areas.
Mm, absolutely. Interesting story that the Israeli Navy yesterday took possession of the first four missile ships. Tell us about this.
So this is the first of four. There will ultimately be four. Yesterday was the first one. Mm-hmm. And this is a very, very new missile ship that the Israeli Navy doesn't have at the moment, the so-called Sa'ar 6, which is a German-produced missile corvette, arrived yesterday in Israel. The Israeli flag was raised on the Israeli Navy ship Magen. That's the name that's been given to this particular ship. Magen, meaning shield. This, as we said, will be the first of four. The other four names have already been decided upon. The second one will be called Oz, Oz meaning strength. The third one will be called Atzmaut, meaning independence. And the fourth one will be called Nitzachon, meaning victory. And what I understand is that these ships really are going to be deployed around those burgeoning gas fields off the coast of Israel to try to protect Israel's economic interests rather than Israel's security interests. And this was alluded to in the speech that was made by the commander of the Marine Corps, General Eliyahu Shavit. He said that the Magen is well positioned to meet Israel's strategic needs as well. And then he went on to say that the Magen, as well as its sister ships, will be deployed for the protection of the strategic assets of the state of Israel in its economic waters. So what we've seen now is that this whole new gas field development that's taken place within the Mediterranean quite unexpectedly. I mean, there was, you know, for a long time already speculation that there might be gas within the Mediterranean area that, that could potentially be exploited. But for many, many years, there was no progress towards exploiting it. Now, over the last two, three, 4 years, all of a sudden, we've now developed gas fields. The gas is being pumped out from those gas fields under the water. And of course, this presents a particular threat being off the coast of Israel. And so it seems as if these are now the corvette ships that will be deployed to try to protect those areas. An interesting development in terms of Israel's security needs being driven by economic interests.
Interesting. Israeli companies, speaking about commercial and economic, Israeli companies are set to begin conducting COVID-19 tests on employees. How's this going to work?
Well, it's going to start with those companies that are really government-owned companies, government-owned defense companies. Particularly, Rafael is a company that has announced that it's going to start carrying out COVID coronavirus tests on its employees as part of contract testing pilot, which has been proposed by the IDF's Home Front Command. And effectively, workers will be tested upon arriving at work, and their results will be received within 6 to 8 hours. And of course, any employee found to be positive will immediately enter quarantine alongside any of those who might have come into contact with them. And the way that's going to work is that the test will not be mandatory, but obviously the company will be encouraging their employees to take tests, as they do, for example, encourage people to take annual flu vaccinations, because it's obviously not only within the individual's interest to be protected, but it's also within the company's interest too. Rafael has over 8,000 employees, so this is quite a large body of people that this test can be conducted upon. So they reckon that this is going to be just the first of many companies that will offer the opportunity, perhaps even strongly encourage employees to take tests when they come to work. It's not obviously going to be a daily thing, because the result takes 6 or 8 hours. So I presume that it's going to be relatively frequent. And I think it sits alongside the recommendation that school children will be tested a few times a week. That hasn't happened yet, but Rafael is the first company that has decided to try this pilot out. And I'm guessing that if it's successful, many other companies will do so too. I mean, it will also help to prop up the number of coronavirus tests that are being conducted in Israel, which seems to have dropped off over the past week or so. But apparently, we're told that Israel has the capability to conduct something like 100,000 tests every day, which is not being filled at the moment. So by doing so, conducting these tests at the company level, the idea will be to try to take advantage of those 100,000 tests that can be handled as much as possible.
Yeah, and it's very clearly all about the testing, and it's about the speed at which results are known that I believe will be a massive help in containing the virus. Another interesting story about Israeli judoka. They've won medals in the European competitions.
So we know, of course, that Israel has historically, traditionally been very, very good in the judo area, medals won at the Olympic Games and in various competitions. On this occasion, two of our lady judoka winning medals at the European Championships, which took place the day before yesterday in Croatia. The two new names that we're going to be watching now are Inbar Lanier, who took a gold medal in the under 78 kilogram category of the under 23 European Championships, and Maya Goshen, who took a silver medal in the under 70 kilogram competition. So both of those ladies, it's very unusual for Israel to be successful and win medals in two particular events, but that's what happened this week. Inbar Lanier has also won a bronze medal last week in a European Championships, this time in the under 21 European Championships. She's only 20 years old, so she's competing in a category of under 23s, where she won the gold medal, which of course have girls who are much older than her. And of course, we're very proud indeed of the achievements, not only of these two ladies, but indeed of all the judoka who've brought a lot of credit to Israel on the sports field. And, you know, it's nice to have good news, even though these days it's not so easy to go out and watch these events, and it's unclear what might be happening with the Olympic Games, which has already been postponed. But it's good that there are these competitions, and that our sportsmen and women can keep their hand in and keep fit and keep competing and show their abilities.
Yeah, absolutely right. Unfortunately, it's not always about good sportsmanship. The Iranian chess team faces a ban for refusing to play against Israeli players. We've seen this before. So what's the latest case?
Yeah, so this is really not a new story, but the latest is simply that the International Chess Federation has made an announcement that they might ban the Iranian Chess Federation from competing in future competitions because of their continued refusal, and those are the words, continued refusal, to allow Iranian chess players to compete against Israeli counterparts. And so this is the idea is that the International Chess Federation has decided that they're simply going to ramp up the pressure on the Iranians to follow the laws. And they've said that if they don't follow the laws, the Iranian Federation will see the consequences. Now, we've seen quite a number of cases of not only in the chess area, but particularly in judo and on other sports fields where Iranian athletes have been specifically instructed by their government not to compete against Israelis, which seems a really crazy thing to do, because if you're going to send your athletes to compete in an international competition, then one would imagine that the idea would be to be sporting and to try to do as well as you can to try to get to the top of that particular competition as best you can. But unfortunately, the Iranian government has forced its sportsmen and women to withdraw from events that involve Israeli competitors. And so now the International Chess Federation, I think a little too late in my opinion, I think that this action should have been taken quite a long time ago and should be more widespread across other sports as well, that where the government is forcing individuals to withdraw, that the federation is penalized for that, because that's not particularly sporting. And even though I know that there's a political issue on the table, but you know, the whole idea of sport is to somehow try to escape from the political constraints and to be sporting about it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, because this could have a potentially detrimental effect on the Iranian sporting world and their ability to reach higher levels.
But does it actually bother them? I mean, we saw that last incident, and I can't remember the name of I think it was a judo champion, or was it wrestling? I think it was judo.
And it affected.
And then somebody else was executed for having a view that's counter to the Iranian regime. They don't really seem to care very, very much.
Well, I don't know that they don't care, because I think the Iranians do like their sport, and I think that they are proud to do well.
Hold on. Gimbal says it's judoka, not judaica. Did I say? I did not say judaica. I might not know what judoka is very well, but I certainly know what judaica is. So that I wouldn't get confused. They're impossible, our listeners. Completely impossible.
Well, that's all right. As long as they're writing, you know, some people say, as long as they're staying engaged, it doesn't really matter too much what they're saying, although we do care what people say, obviously. And it gives me the opportunity to say that I do care what people say. And if there are particular things that you wish me to cover, wish me to talk about more than other things, then please feel free to write in. Just a really crazy story, which I find very hard to believe, is this one where a report by the Central Bureau of Statistics claims that the Haredi population, which currently numbers approximately 1.1 million as about 12% of the Israeli population, they reckon that the Haredi population is going to rise to 6.5 million by the year 2065. Now, I know it's a long way away, and I'm certainly not going to be around when eventually that happens, but that seems really outrageous to expect that there will be a six-fold increase in the number of people within a 45-year period. I think that sounds exaggerated to me. I don't know what you guys think about that.
So look, I'm not great with numbers, but certainly it does sound just a little bit over the top. Gimpel says, by the way, the Iranian fighter is now representing Mongolia.
So that's the one that defected, that was given an opportunity to fight. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there have been a few cases of Iranian sports people defecting because they're in the business of sport, not politics. And the moment their hands get tied behind their backs by the International Federation, some of them at least have become so frustrated that they've decided to defect. It has happened.
And that's where we leave it, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always, wishing you a fantastic weekend.